everyone, welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The Great American Bash is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are experts in the field, considering that we're the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You could find that and pieces that we've written for places like The Washington Post and Slate, Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, and more at presidentwrestler.com. To listen to the newest episode of The Great American Bash, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/gabpod, G-A-B-P-O-D. This episode features a chat with Wrestling Observer's Mike Sempervivi and was recorded on June 6th, 2017. Here's episode 45 of The Great American Bash.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, though, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
We are sitting in Washington, D.C., home of the Trump International Hotel and home of the current Universal Champion, Donald J. Trump, the Donald. Chris and I wrote a co-wrote a book called The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. And this is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling, because it's 2017 and we're on the road to great balls of fire.
Jesus. It's Tuesday, June 6th, 8:25 a.m., day 137 of the Donald's Universal Championship reign. A lot of things happened since the last time we talked about 10 days ago.
Correct.
And we should just kick it off with the big show.
Well, it's a big show.
Which isn't that the big show was on Raw in the 10 o'clock hour. It's that there's more information about the Moscow screwjob. Something we've been talking about for quite some time. I think the first time we used that wonderful turn of phrase was back in December.
Oh, yeah. We might have used it before then. It might have been like the conventions when some general was like, hey, WikiLeaks, do your thing with Russia. And then they did.
Wait, what about when some presidential candidate say, hey, Russians, why don't you hack my opponent?
Yeah, and maybe did. Maybe that was the time.
Yeah, well, this is...
In other words, Chris and I have been seeing this match been called since June.
Yeah, and we're finally we're on the road to Great Balls of Fire. So the big report was on The Intercept. They had received a report from an NSA report that said that Russian military intelligence executed a cyber attack on at least one U.S. voting software supplier and sent spear phishing emails to more than 100 local election officials just days before the election. It's a report from May 5th. It's the most detailed U.S. government account of Russian interference in the election that has come to light. While this stuff sounds familiar, it's the first time that we have like a government confirmation or at least a report about the fact that it was Russian military, not just a rogue band of Russian hackers or Macedonian teens or something.
Or according to Vladimir Putin, maybe it was the U.S. trying to frame the
Yeah, who's to say? Well, the NSA was to say it.
This isn't part of our notes, but could we agree that that is brilliant wrestling logic?
Yeah.
Putin excuse?
Yeah. He just knocked himself out. We'll get to that to make it look like I did it. Also, the big part of this news is that the person who leaked this... has already been arrested.
Yeah.
A 25-year-old intelligence contractor by the shoot name of Reality Winner, which I thought was
I thought it was a code name or a joke.
It was in all caps in a intelligence report. I could have sworn it was going to... I thought it was like, what, they get Omarosa or something? Like, I didn't know the Reality Lay Winner, who has now been... who is our new Edward Snowden, has already been arrested. Because kind of some shit, like, The Intercept putting up the scan with the folds, that actually told the NSA that, hey, it was someone who printed it out because it's folded paper. Who printed it? Who's been emailing? Narrowed it down real quick. Did not protect their source at all. And that's why we hear about the great work of The Intercept all the time, because they protect their sources so well.
Does The Intercept run anything about wrestling ever?
Let's find out.
Okay. So I would just like to make it clear that lots of people do leak to real, more established sources like the Washington Post and the New York Times, and they're safe. So if you're someone that might be listening to this show that might want to do something like that, don't tell us tell someone like the Washington Post or the New York Times and maybe not The Intercept.
Yeah, and like Google how to leak securely, because a lot of these places have secure Dropboxes.
The Washington Post for sure, the New York Times for sure. There are multiple reporters that could do this that hopefully won't get you in trouble. That being said, Reality Winner was very upfront and did not deny doing this in any way. This is not a mystery in any way, which is also interesting.
Yeah.
This is someone that is she's a contractor, but she also has served in the military.
Yeah, Army, linguist, speaks four languages, I think.
This is someone that was willing to do this maybe even as a whistleblower, but maybe this is quicker. And when something like the Road to Great Balls of Fire is on, you need to act with quickness,
I gotta
agility.
Got to get that network. Act now. So, I mean, just the Trump-Russia story, the drumbeat continues. This is one of these things that I don't think will even be, like, in a week from now, once again, we'll be like, oh, remember that NSA report? Oh, remember Reality Winner? It'll just be another entry in the Wikipedia article about this huge controversy, which could take down a presidency.
Or not.
Or not take down a presidency. But I think in 2 days it's already going to be supplanted when we have...
Yeah, this might be the first week we have to do two episodes since the week of the president's win.
Yeah, yeah. Because on Thursday, according to CNN, it's Comey mania.
Oh, boy.
What a bunch of jokers. Who would make a joke about politics and wrestling?
So, Chris and I live in Washington, D.C. It's the home of the Trump International Hotel. It's also the home of the White House, whatever. Because we're in Washington, D.C., there's a bar opening up at 8 a.m. to live stream or to screen the hearing. So, you know how people wake up early for the Derby or the Super Bowl? Nope.
Here's
the
a hint.
Comey hearing.
Here's a hint. You turn on CNN or CNN.com at your home, and you just drink at breakfast. And that's how you get through day 139 of the presidency.
So this is not going to just be at one bar in Washington, D.C. or just on CNN. This is going to be on all the major networks as well.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are maybe like my mother who watch soap operas are going to be very upset that our stories aren't on. The same way we get very upset when tennis interrupts.
The dog show
interrupts Monday Night
it's
Raw
the dog
and SmackDown.
Show. Yeah.
So yeah, Comey is Comey mania this Thursday.
Yeah, so we'll maybe have a second report this
week. It's coming for you, brother.
What you gonna do when the president doesn't invoke executive privilege? But like we said, I mean, as we always said, day to day, there's always new developments. If we had done this podcast a week ago, we probably would have been talking a lot about the president's tweets that everyone had a good laugh about. That has already been forgotten mostly, thankfully, when he was tweeting about, despite the constant negative press, Covfefe, and then tweeted, who can figure out the true meaning of Covfefe? Enjoy. Which is what everyone did. We all enjoyed it. We all made memes of his probably doing the move where you drop your phone on your face when you're tweeting before sleep. Never done that? Drop your phone on your face? I brought this one up only because there was a... Also getting in on the fun was one of the wrestlers we follow a lot here, Sami Zayn, who tweeted that I had a great time tonight facing two very talented Covfefe.
Sami Zayn is great, and he is very important to the company and to social media.
He has resist written on his tights.
And he comes up later in our interview with Mike, but this is just too easy for me, I guess, to care about the
Covfefe. No. I mean,
and the fact that he actually made a joke about it, it's kind of
immediately
fun.
And then the fact that Spicer was like, we know what Covfefe means. With the fact that they have to sell it, that's the fun part.
I think at one point he was like, I'm gonna play this like a baby, and it worked.
Yeah,
so good for him.
I mean, he clearly knows what he's doing when it comes to manipulating people. Also, if we'd done this a few days after that, we probably would have been talking about how Trump has pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, the climate change accords. I like that the earliest that the U.S. can actually be out of this is November 4th, 2020, the day after the 2020 election. I mean, he could still do it. There's lame duck presidencies. Well,
I don't think the election is the third. I think it's the week after. I think it's the second Tuesday of the month.
True.
So
where
I think
did
it's,
I get that it's election 11/3. All right.
So it's a week. So, but in theory, whoever runs against him and says like, "Hey, we want to be back in,"
yeah,
just give us a week.
Yeah.
They could do that.
Yeah.
The same way...
No, it's scheduled for November 3rd.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So the same way that if you're Triple H, you could be like, hey, Russia, I'm going to set up the secret back channel. We're next. Don't worry about it. NXT. We're the future.
Yeah, I like how that sentence is just totally nonsense. And you're mixing work and shoot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people who listen to the show will hopefully get it. Also, someone who gets it...
Rusev is Rusev's so the best. Good.
Rusev taking a break from not being on SmackDown and tweeting about the Natural Predators.
The CM Punk of the 2017 Stanley Cup Finals, Rusev.
Oh, because he's there.
And he's just not wrestling.
Yeah, he's
not giving a shit.
Creative has nothing for him or his wife, and he's just watching hockey. He tweeted, Syria, Nicaragua, Murica, Murica. Take that world, hashtag superpowers. So it's kind of a work shoot tweet about the Paris Agreement, which is amazing that happened in 2017.
You want to do the quick rundown of why those countries aren't? Those are like the
two. Yeah, those are the three countries that are not in it. Syria, because it's Syria and they're in the midst of a civil war. Nicaragua, because it wasn't strong enough. And America, because of Donald Trump.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So both Rusev and Trump playing babies this week.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, when Rusev comes back, if he's not a, you know, handsome Rusev baby face champion.
Wait for that shirt.
If he's not Big Bartholomew. Yeah, but this is where those were the big things that happened in the last 10 days that have already kind of left the public consciousness, I think. They've been supplanted because we've had London. There's been another attack, a third attack in a matter of months in the UK, terrorist attacks. And now Trump is getting more involved and back on Twitter.
And now is time for our segment that I miss the most. Alternative facts are still real to me, damn it.
Alternative facts are
still real to me, damn it.
So these terrorist attacks in London, knife attacks, London Bridge, Borough Market. I've been to both and it is kind of shocking. When it's like, I can imagine that happening because it's like where it's a bottleneck and
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever.
What? You don't think about like, oh, if I'm leaving 930 Club and we can have there'd be a terrorist attack. You don't think about that stuff?
No, never. Because if you look at the stats of what's going to happen ever, that's not it. Even if you play this out in every scenario, the likelihood of you getting injured or dying because of this stuff is so minuscule, it doesn't matter.
Okay, but Bray Wyatt won the championship this year. So, like, literally anything is possible.
He had the fireflies behind him. For years.
Everything is possible. Anything is possible. So there were these London attacks, and Trump started tweeting about guns. He mostly started tweeting about travel ban, in all caps, a thing that has been defeated in court two times and is now on its way to Supreme Court. It keeps getting defeated because he keeps calling it a travel ban. And he keeps tweeting about it and giving more evidence that it is exactly what his lawyers are saying it's not.
So this is alternative facts for two different reasons. Number one, because it actually doesn't do anything. Number two, because it is and it is not a travel ban at the exact same time, because he says it is and his advocates say it's not and the courts say it is, but he say it's not. And then he says it is. He's having fun.
Yeah. Lisa needs braces. Travel ban. He just keeps saying it over and over again. And it actually doesn't, you know, it doesn't have... It's so tangentially related to London, like the gun thing, which turned into a meme unto itself, you know, just saying, oh, you know, notice there were no guns in this terrorist attack, saying, like, he's kind of arguing against his point.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Whatever.
They were only able to stab people instead of just start firing AKs in a crowded marketplace.
It harder to murder.
Yeah. But in any event, as he tweets, we are... All caps, extreme vetting, people coming to the U.S. in order to keep our country safe. The courts are slow and political. So he's basically saying we have some new extreme rules for immigration, which is great because on Sunday night was the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, a Raw branded affair from Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore. We didn't go, but we watched some of it, which is just as good. Uneven show, you watched the main event of
it. I watched the main event of Raw Talk. I love the main event, and I had no good expectations for it. What about you?
I think the main event was solid. I wish they had in all the spots that they did that were supposed to be special. They'd already blown all the face-offs. Well, you don't watch Raw.
No, so, I do. Yeah, I watch
all the face-offs, all the special, like, buckle bomb into Superman punch. They had blown all these spots already. Nothing really special. The rest of it is the rest of the show. I mean, the Hardys lost, which needed to happen, which is good because they can eventually be broken. Mm-hmm. Alexa won, but Bayley looks like a goober.
Yeah.
The Cruiserweight match was very good. Good storytelling.
Speaking of storytelling, we should plug this at the top of the show. You have a feature in Baltimore City Paper.
Yes, I do. It's about Rich Swann, who won his match with Sasha Banks against Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. Very rare for a babyface to win at home because Vince thinks it's funny when a babyface loses in front of their hometown crowd. He thinks it gets heel heat. It doesn't get heel heat. What it does is get the fans more behind the babyface. Worked with Naomi in Orlando. It'll work with Swann in Baltimore.
This is also pointed out by Sasha on Raw Talk, which was very interesting.
Oh, the fact that people don't win in hometowns.
Yeah, he broke the streak.
Yeah, well, Bayley just lost. She lost the belt a couple months ago in San Jose in her hometown. Yeah, no, I mean, I see the logic, but it mostly seems just like
cruel.
We're going to make them lose in front of their friends and family. But if you read my article, you'll see that why Rich Swann's story is even more unlikely than just winning a pay-per-view match in his own hometown. But yeah, really uneven show, but it's Raw. What do you think? The
highlight, I guess?
The highlight would be Samoa Joe winning the Fatal 5-Way to set the course of the new era, hashtag, and be the next person to lose to Brock at Great Balls of Fire, which we've been saying, but just to reiterate, that is a pay-per-view title in the year of our Lord 2017, the year of the Warlord.
If anyone is going to this show, please, please, please buy us as much merchandise as possible that says Great Balls of Fire. The more bootleg, the better.
No, yeah. I mean, the actual logo is just like fiery cock and balls. That's what it is. And the promos for it now are doubling down on the Jerry Lee Lewis, right?
I haven't even noticed it yet.
No, I mean, the song.
The song is Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah, well, they're playing that, and they're doing like a sock hop theme and like Samoa Joe's Diner. And
oh,
like they're showing records and all this stuff, and it's
God.
Like, it's like Vince was like, "I need a rock song that's older than anyone who's watching the show, and also if it could be by someone incestuous, that'd be a plus."
This is,
and here we are, Great Balls of Fire.
So great. Do you think that Great Balls of Fire merchandise will sell so much that it will never be on sale in the WWE shop?
No, I think it'll sell the right amount, which is like, I don't know how many people.
I will buy. Once
no,
it goes to $5 a shirt, I'm buying them out.
Okay.
I'm buying
that's
all
good.
Of the great, everybody's getting Great Balls of Fire merch
forever.
For
just
Christmas.
All the sizes, Great Balls of Fire. I actually did buy some merch this week because stuff
What'd
was on
get?
Sale. I got a New Day shirt that was like, they did it in a partnership with something, and it's actually a nice shirt. Like it's like a,
oh, so it's not like
starchy cardboard. It's like nice, the heathery
nice.
Fabric, and doesn't have anything written on the back.
Okay.
And it's not in the color black. So I was like, I got to get that. It's the New Day. And then I got my wife a Bromie shirt because she's a hype bro. You almost spit your coffee out of the computer. That's a shoot, brother. My wife was very happy with her Mojo Rawley t-shirt.
I like Mojo.
Yeah. He's on the A Show, SmackDown. Extreme Rules was a Raw pay-per-view, the bad show. It's unwatchable these days. I watched some yesterday. Try to make 3-minute Raw.
Yeah, we should plug your 3-minute Raws. Every week you do a breakdown of, you're not going to watch 3 hours Raw. You're not even going to watch the 90-minute Raw. Here's a 3-minute Raw to get everything you need to know.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, how do I fill 3 minutes? It's like, what angles do I need to put on here? Kurt angles, which angles need to be on this? But yeah, just a quick rundown of how bad this show is right now. Enzo and Cass keep getting attacked individually. Well, now Cass got attacked for the first time. Enzo had been getting attacked, and it's because in real life, Vince McMahon thinks it's funny when Enzo gets ragdolled around.
Also, this hasn't really been in the 90-minute Raw. Ever.
Oh, really?
I don't think it's made it once.
Well, they've made it an angle where then heel commentator and excellent commentator Corey Graves said, well, I think it's Big Cass doing it to his own tag team partner, and then they had a little showdown, which that kind of like announcers getting the face of the wrestlers. I mean, Kevin Owens would do it as a joke and do it just to tease and be a heel, but they haven't made it like storyline. Now we can get to a little more Graves stuff. It really looked for a minute that it's going to be the swerve is going to be that it's Big Cass tired of Enzo, and then they're going to go separate because every tag team since the Rockers has to break up, even though there's literally no reason for these guys to break up. But now it looks like they are actually going the other way, the right swerve, which is it's the Revival doing it. The Revival's hanging out in the background of shots. They're planting evidence. And it's pretty great for them to try to get in
there. So this has been on the 90-minute version,
yeah.
The Revival stuff, but like, yeah. like only after the fact of the beatdown. So like,
yeah.
you never saw the beatdown.
You don't know
weeks
why.
Ago.
Yeah, they're there. But now last night, so apparently a chain. They had placed evidence, and now it's sowing seeds of dissent.
Sure, sure.
It's great.
But the reason why I care about this is because this is where we get our most fake news and calling people bad reporters are these segments, like the Revival calling
yes.
the nameless, faceless correspondents bad reporters and fake journalists. So we get into our fake media, finally.
Right. We also did get it on SmackDown where JBL called his co-hosts fake news.
Yeah, but JBL believes that, and that's the difference?
Yeah, that's a shoot, yeah. Somehow this storyline led to Enzo teaming with Big Show last night, which was not the Big Show of our show. It just happened. I watched it kind of incredulously. A big angle they're doing with Kurt Angle is getting blackmailed. He just kind of looked mystified at looking at his phone. That's the segment, and he talks to Corey Graves.
What's that Twitter account that I always forget the name of that I love?
Total Divas Eps.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle looking at his phone.
Just looking at his phone. He has no idea what's going on. It's going to be Stephanie, because what else could it possibly be? So that's bad. Goldust and R-Truth doing movie references at each other. R-Truth's doing Shaft, also very topical, like Great Balls of Fire. He did Few Good Men and Pulp Fiction, which is at least like within the last 3 decades. They didn't have a match at the pay-per-view for some reason. Hardys weren't on Raw, so they didn't get broken last night. Bray Wyatt is a loser.
Yeah.
The women's division's a mess. Somehow, I don't give a shit about Bayley, Sasha Banks. They've made Dana Brooke and Mickie James, who are just natural heels, into kind of faces. I don't know. There's this whole segment last night. The only person who comes out looking good is Alexa, because there's only been a few good parts of Raw. Alexa Bliss continues to be great, getting through shitty material. The Drifter, Elias Sampson. Like, I didn't think his gimmick worked at NXT, and he kind of got go-away heat right until the end. But him coming out, they turn the lights off in the arena. He sits there. He strums. He sounds like Roger Waters doing, like, what's the Pink Floyd Blue Eyes?
Here? Oh, Behind Blue Eyes?
Behind Blue Eyes, doing like that. Or maybe he's doing Fred Durst doing Behind Blue Eyes. And coming out and saying, don't hold your applause till I'm done performing. And just kind of talk singing. It's been really great. And he's about to feud with Ambrose.
Which is great for everyone, I think.
Yeah, and he looks good. He looks the part.
The matchup of the jeans.
Yeah, it's the jeans and scraggly hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one's scraggly hair, one's just barely holding on.
It's tough. And the best part of Raw is Samoa Joe last night.
Yeah.
Cutting a great promo, getting in a promo battle with
Paul
Heyman.
We will not be playing that promo. Because it doesn't sound good in an audio-only podcast.
Right. He cut a regular promo about his match with Brock
Lesnar. And it was fine.
And it was fine. Heyman stepped it up, actually made... This is a thing that... This is a wrestling logic thing, but I'm sure there's a political analog, is the fact that if Heyman comes out and says, Brock Lesnar is going to eat you for breakfast, who cares? Mm-hmm. Where's the money? Mm-hmm. And he has to make Joe look like a good opponent, or beating him means nothing. It was just like, I eat a piece of shit for you like breakfast. It doesn't mean anything. You've devalued your opponent. So he makes Joe look like $1 million. And then Joe, off mic, but on camera mic, basically told Heyman, I'm disappointed your client's not here. Tell him how this felt. And then strapped on the coquina clutch, a sleeper hold. Paul Heyman taking bumps for the business in 2017.
It was great.
Yeah, it was great. And so, that's why you should use advocates.
Really quick, before we get to that, 2 points. Number one, Samoa Joe actually said, I wish Paul Heyman was my advocate.
Yeah.
Number two, when was the last Heyman beatdown? We were talking about this before the show. I know for sure there was the Punk Kendo Stick stuff.
Now, I'm...
And you think that there was a Goldberg...
Yes,
did he take
there
a
was.
Bump?
He did. Okay. In October, on Halloween... Rusev was involved for some reason, and
okay.
it took a, and I guess Heyman took a, I remember this, he took a really bad spear.
Okay.
For some reason.
Okay.
He basically just fell over. So he doesn't take bumps a lot, but this was a good one, and it was believable.
It was great. Now we get to the point.
Yes. So this is why, in wrestling and in politics, why you should use advocates, because, like, this is building up the match. Brock Lesnar doesn't have to leave his farm in real life. the shoot reason is, yeah, he doesn't want to show up to Raw. The work reason is, the longer you can go without having physical contact between Brock and Joe and just kind of tease it out, the better it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So you have an advocate go out there. You have Joe look menacing and look like a psychopath who's going to take this 50-year-old man and choke him out on live TV. So both guys are looking, once again, looking good, getting you to buy that network for Great Balls of Fire in a month and a half. And in politics...
Hold on, stop.
What?
They're bringing the Honky Tonk Band back, right? Like, that's the reason they're doing this. They're going to announce, like, the Honky Tonk Award for the Drifter, and he gives him a guitar. Like, there's got to be...
There's too many things going on pointing in that... Well, that makes too much sense, though. And you've also got The Miz trying to be, like, this longest IC champion. It just makes too much sense. We will know on July 9th at Great Balls of Fire.
So
advocates, here's why you should use them. That's in wrestling. That's why it's very effective. Also, in the women's match, Alexa, she got herself DQ'd by putting some people in between herself and her opponent. A person who doesn't, who refuses to use advocates.
Oh, really quick. Alexa off.
Oh my God.
Whenever you say Alexa loud enough, the Alexa Amazon dot turns on.
What did I say that got Alexa to play the Offspring, though?
Something we'll you might like. You said
in between.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's weird. It's really because I watch Raw while doing the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use an iPad, and the iPad is like a foot away from it, so it picks it up. Yeah. And whenever Alexa Bliss is announced,
I like how we're whispering because whisper the robot's Alexa. Listening.
Whenever Bliss is announced, it'll turn on and go and suggest something for me. It's very strange. I don't know why they played the Offspring, but in terms of a Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view, you got to keep them separated. It's like 6 months away from SmackDown only.
I think that's
SmackDown
what it was.
Only.
I think something about separating. So in politics, a person who refuses to use advocates would be President Donald J. Trump, Universal Champion. This is a quote today from a Post article about how Republicans are worried about Trump is hurting their agenda. Quote, inside the White House, top officials have in various ways gently suggested to Trump over the past week that he should leave the feuding to surrogates. And I saw that, and I was like, that's going on our podcast. No, but it's Trump has people who can go out there and make whatever claims he wants, and they can carry the story for him. He continuously undermines himself by tweeting the opposite of what they're saying.
You know who was complaining about that today?
Who's that?
Linda McMahon.
Yeah.
In an interview, in a podcast with Politico, she was explaining about how they can't get things done. There's a bottleneck on the hiring, and all of this tweeting, all this other nonsense is getting in the way of the noise. It's sort of like, Vince, you run a wrestling company. You don't have to be a wrestler.
Yeah, you can have guys fight your battles for you like they did at the Battle of the Billionaires, where he used a surrogate. And that's one of those lessons from wrestling that Trump is forgetting. You got to get your Lashleys out there. Take on these Umagas. Rest in peace, Umaga.
So we're going to end the episode at the chat I had with Mike Sempervivi from Wrestling Observer Live. It is so nice to talk to somebody who actually talks into microphones for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike
what
a
are
lot
you trying
of,
to say?
Unlike a lot of people that you and I both interview. Not a lot of verbal fillers with this one. It's a good chat. I really enjoyed it, and it's pretty long, so this is going to be a longer episode. We might be back later this week, depending on what happens on Thursday.
More at Comey Mania.
So what I want to know from someone like you who actually covers wrestling on a very full-time basis is, do you think the WWE will once again get into the political arena?
As in, as far as like running a candidate or being open or being open to a candidate, or more along the lines of inviting presidential candidates on to do a little speech as they did with Obama and Clinton and Bush.
Well, they did that also with McCain in 2008.
Or with McCain. I'm sorry, with McCain.
I was more referring to, do you think there's going to be another like Hillary versus Obama in the ring match like they did in 2008? Or is there going to be another Rosie versus Trump match and they actually bring in candidates and use impersonators like they have in the past 10 years?
You know what? When it comes to Vince McMahon, you can never put it past him. And in professional wrestling, everything that's old ends up becoming new again. It may not be in exactly the same form, but oftentimes it happens. And I believe if Vince McMahon is alive long enough, and enough time is gone from Linda or any other person in that family's lust to get into politics anytime soon. I could absolutely see that returning. I don't think it's going to happen within the next 4 years, obviously, because of Linda's place in the Small Business Administration. And I don't believe that it's going to come up too much after that as well, too, because I think there obviously are members of that family, Linda McMahon most notably, that have always had eyes on being either in with that class or have something to do with the political class. And now that it's happened, I don't think they're going to try to turn their backs on it. You know, Stephanie's had fellowships, and I'm sure that they want the same things for their daughters as well, too, to be kind of in that elite. And whether Vince truly himself wants that or not, I think at this point in the family, and far be it from me to tell you about the psychology of that family, of which I know nobody personally, but as I would sit there from the outside and look at the business and look at where they have evolved, I don't think you necessarily want to go back and do things like that unless it suits you, and I don't see it suiting them anytime soon.
If you could make a dollar, is it worth it for Vince McMahon at this point?
Oh, for Vince in his heart of hearts, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I think if it were up to him and there were no ramifications from it whatsoever, I'm sure he'd be doing something over the top right now with it. I think he is a pure promoter through and through. And I think, you know, the ends will always justify the means, at least as far as trying something and putting it out there and towing the line and pushing things forward. I'm sure absolutely he'd be for it. But I don't think it's necessarily the thing they want to do from a business point of view. And I don't think it's something that they have to do either. And I think he knows that as well, too.
It's difficult to not mention it for so long when it used to be such a big part of the product. And it always was a big part of the product. I mean, the first time The Rock said his catchphrase, can you smell what The Rock is cooking, was to Jennifer Flowers at a WrestleMania. This is not unheard of.
Yeah.
But it goes back to The Rock. The Rock just hosted SNL for the fifth time. The first skit was a rehash of a former WWE skit that they already did the previous time The Rock hosted. But the show opens with a monologue announcing his fake candidacy for president, yet Vince is not capitalizing on this. If The Rock as president or potential presidential running mate, whatever, keeps rearing its head, do you think they'll have to address it?
I think they can absolutely address it, but I know that what they can also do is make sure that it's not going to be a focal point of the show. There's a difference in mentioning it on the show if he were to actually run as president, you know, to run for president, you know, and that actually were to take place. I think there's a difference between mentioning it or him mentioning it on the show and having it be the focal point or having it hijack the show, which in another era, obviously, it would. It most definitely would, especially if he's running against Donald Trump and especially if Linda McMahon is in office. I'm sure Vince McMahon, from a creative point of view, could have a field day with all that sort of stuff. I just don't believe in the current climate as it stands right now that it would be a thing that WWE would want to perpetuate too much. There's a difference between, you know, mentioning politics and playing politics. And when you would have Vince involved and Linda involved and all that sort of stuff, I think, you know, I think that's where I just can't see that happening. Again, in a different era, absolutely. But I don't just see that happening.
It's hard to understand why they both would do it and why they wouldn't do it. They're in a very weird situation. Sami Zayn is also in a very weird situation. Sami Zayn is now being used as a spokesman for the expansion, essentially, to the Middle East, which is fantastic. And he's hanging out with Stephanie McMahon, doing press conferences. But he's also tweeting some stuff that isn't so positive of the current administration. Have you heard of any backlash, no pun intended, for any of the wrestlers or anyone in creative about maybe not being so open on Twitter?
I have not. I have not. And I know, you know, Kevin Owens is, you know, most of these guys and ladies, I think when it comes to things that take place, I, you know, there's a level of self-control there. And that goes with anything, including politics. You know, somebody's going to slip and do the wrong thing on social media. It happens all the time. It's just, it's a countdown until, you know, when it occurs and who it's going to be, you know, before somebody messes up again. So sooner or later it's going to happen. But I'm sure, you know, that the call has been made when it comes to politics, as well as many other things, because of all the leaks and hacks of people's clouds and things like that. It's a general social media thing of basically, you know, don't say anything that you can't basically unwind and take back, the same way of just basically protect yourself and know that everything is out there and know that you need to pay attention. You don't see a lot of it from the creative team. You don't see a lot of it from even people that are agents and things like that that we know, trainers, guys like Steve Corino or Adam Pearce or Jimmy Jacobs or guys like that. You don't see them talking about a whole lot of this stuff online anyway. It's usually only a couple of people. And yes, in the case of Sami Zayn, he's probably the most notable one out there. But I don't think he said anything that would be inflammatory or anything like that. And I think with him, if he has been told anything, it's just, you know, just be careful of what you say, be mindful of who you work for. But again, whether that's even happened or not, I would really wonder about.
Have you been careful about what you say?
As far as like politics and things like that?
Yeah, because you'll occasionally tweet some political stuff, and it's usually common sense stuff like, hey, maybe you don't beat up the reporter. You know, like, it's not anything.
Sure.
Consistently resharing stuff from the Washington Post or anything like that. But at the same time, you definitely have a point of view. You're a human being. You definitely skew one way that might not necessarily be the same as, I don't know, the typical wrestling fan.
Oh, hey, look, you know, a lot with me, it comes from the fact that I grew up in the D.C. area my entire life. I've always been a news junkie. You know, and I just, you know, I have an opinion, and I like and I enjoy, I find comedy in things. I find, you know, a lot of different things and lots of things. And I try to be kind of general about how I lay things out. Now, there has been, you know, some things when it comes to the obvious when it comes to this administration and with other things as well, too. But just most notably this administration where it's like, all right, come on. You know, it's just, you can't help but call something out. And that wouldn't just be for him. It would be for anybody. So, you know, but again, I haven't had any limitations put on me. And I think I've actually tried to respect that, too, when it comes to, you know, trying to represent my family or my employers or anything else. You know, I don't represent them on Twitter, but I also don't try to put myself in a position where, you know, I get battered about either. I try to put myself in a position where, and this has happened a couple of times with a couple of things, I have people on both sides say I'm an idiot and say I'm working for the other side. And if I'm doing that and getting that sort of response, I'm probably doing something right because it's right in the middle where I like to sit.
Are you enjoying what's going on right now in WWE and the product in general and across the countries? Because I went to a CMLL show for the first time in February, and my wife absolutely hates WWE and pretty much any pro wrestling. She had a blast. I had a blast. And they are completely leaning into politics. They are not afraid at all to just go with the caricature of Corey Graves' brother as the biggest Donald Trump supporter. They're getting success out of that. Is that why I'm enjoying it more? Am I enjoying it more because it's more classical, old school versus a bunch of, I don't know, the current product of WWE, which can't decide if it wants to do, like, we're going to go in the Attitude Era or we're going to do a bunch of indie spots. They don't know who they are right now. Are you enjoying what you're seeing right now?
No, I'm not. And if it wasn't my job, would I watch, you know, 5 live hours and up to 8 to 10, I guess, if there's an NXT live takeover show, hours of WWE per week? No, I wouldn't do that if I wasn't getting paid for it. I don't think anybody would, and I don't think anybody is, and that's their biggest problem right now. They have probably the smallest mainstream crowd that they've had ever being interested in their product. Now, those people are paying a lot more, and they're lucky to have TV deals across the world, and they're lucky to have built their business. They're not lucky. It took skill to do what they did. It took a lot of work to do what they did. But they're in a position right now where they don't have to worry about, you know, every single last dollar and bottom line. And unfortunately, sometimes it makes them take their eyes off the prize, or it allows them to take their eyes off the prize. All of this buildup leading into Extreme Rules, this last pay-per-view they had, kind of proved that. Everything stunk about it. Almost every single thing down to the nubs did. And there's just too much other good stuff out there. You mentioned CMLL. There's other promotions in Mexico. There's a bunch of promotions in the UK right now and in Ireland that are doing, you know, exceptional things. There's over the top wrestling and Revolution Pro and groups like that in Japan, obviously New Japan, DDT. There's a Dragon Gate, which people kind of forget about. And in this country, Evolve, there's AAW, a ton of these groups, and all of them have things that are accessible to the average fan now through streaming. It's a little bit of a negative in that there's so much stuff out there that some people are going to live and some people are going to die. It's just a matter of what gets the most attention. And that may not necessarily be the most fair thing, but that's kind of how capitalism works. And, you know, there's going to be some people that die off, but there's so many of these streaming services out there that there's, if you're a wrestling fan, you can't complain that WWE is not giving you what you want, because there's so much stuff out there that you can just go ahead and take if you want it. So, and CMLL is a good example of that. Now, you can get away with things in Mexico that you can never get away with here right now. You know, as far as, you know, you can do have exoticos and things like that that obviously fly there culturally, and a lot of machismo things and things like that that you can't do here right now, especially in a PG era. But, you know, again, it's there's so much stuff out there. If you're a wrestling fan or if you're a sports entertainment fan, there's got to be something out there that you can latch onto. If you can't, then you're probably really not a fan at this point.
So you said something that I agree with to the most part. But, yes, there aren't exoticos here, but you're still doing Gold Dust rehashing, not even rehashing, just doing the same gimmick for 20 years. That is an exotico. You have the nationalism stuff with Jinder Mahal. You're doing these things in the main product. You're just not being, the WWE isn't being very specific about it. They're just like, you hate Jinder because he's not.
Well, no, but when it comes to that, that's not, that sort of thing just has always annoyed me, because in 2017, we're doing the same thing over again with a guy, and it showed, number one, you could, you know, separate any racism or jingoism out of the way, you know, for a second, and just look at how tired that story is. You took a guy who was jobbing to death, who you had no interest in whatsoever, and then you almost overnight suddenly realized you need the Indian market. So all of a sudden, okay, we're going to prop this guy up. So how do we rebuild him? They went back to the oldest story in the book that they know how to do, which is one of their laziest, which is Evil Foreigner. All of a sudden, this guy from Calgary, we don't like him because of how he looks. We don't like him because how he talks. Now, there was an opportunity to take a guy in an ever-changing North America and go, this guy could be a hero. He could be a face of something. We can build him back up and actually make him representative, because people do like people that look like them every once in a while, or from where they're from, to achieve and to actually make it. But instead, you go with the same tired thing, the same tired lame thing. You don't change him whatsoever. And I think it's more of a matter of being incredibly lazy. And again, going back to what you know and not being pushed and not being creative to do anything better, because you're just sitting back on your laurels.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But I would just like to point out that SmackDown Live is still the superior product just because of the face of the United States of America, Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens might be the only person that's walking that edge of blatantly insulting everyone he's facing in both a theatrical way and a sincere way, sort of like Daniel Bryan, the bully of SmackDown Live, that could actually say some anti-Trump stuff and get through to people while completely still playing the role of heel. But to smarks like me, he's just a hero.
Well, look, hey, look, you gotta be good, and the cream rises to the top. And Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan are both a great example of, no matter how badly they treat you or mismanage you or don't believe in you, there are occasionally times where you are just so good and just so cosmically wonderful that you make it and you rise to the top. And I actually feel that same thing about Kevin Owens as I do with Daniel Bryan. I do think he is relatively unsinkable, maybe not to the level that Daniel Bryan got to that way. But yeah, you know, but even with Kevin Owens, and I understand, believe me, 100% of what you're saying, and he's a great example of a guy that knows how to work it on Twitter. He's got everything, I think, down. I'm not saying to a science, but he knows how to be Kevin Owens and how to represent himself. It's still relatively lazy, even though the graphics are great, even though his shirt is great, even though his attitude is great. He's playing the same role that Jinder Mahal is. You don't like me. You don't like where I'm from. You don't like who I sound. You're dumb, ignorant American. Now, that may be the case. They may all be dumb, ignorant Americans. But with that said, not only is he doing that, Mustafa Ali is doing that. And Neville did that. And they're all kind of doing that, where it's all variations of the same kind of boring, tired thing. And that's something that I really wish could be taken to a different level.
We should end on a positive. What's one thing that the standard WWE fan or casual fan might really enjoy that isn't in this product, or maybe they're lapsed and they didn't know about it 10 years ago and it's just an amazing product or a storyline that just it blew your mind and it still makes you happy every once in a while that you do what you do?
I don't know. I that's the one thing is I still really like wrestling. You know, as a growing up again in the D.C. area, there were always like things that were constants. Like there was WTOP, which was an all-news radio station mm-hmm. that I still listen to this day. And the Washington Post, which I still read to this day. And Kornheiser being around, I still listen to his podcast. And it's like, you know, wrestling was always there. And I can never see myself giving up on wrestling. I find, you know, you find these old heads that like they hate it and they hate what Vince did. And, what, and it's like, man, you know, I've taken wrestling pretty seriously, and I've loved it, and I've been able to make a little bit of a career off of it. I don't know how you can ever hate it when there's so many other options out there. There's so many stories that can be told, because at the end of the day, no matter what gaga or nonsense is out there, it's still a great form of entertainment, and I still think a really fun form of entertainment that can shine a mirror back on society sometimes and have, you know, whether that's a funhouse mirror sometimes, you know, that's okay, because sometimes it needs to be a little bit of a warped look back, but I just think it's a timeless form of entertainment, and it's great, and I think if you're a lapsed person that needs to go back and look at something, I mean, you can always go back and look at a lot of the Ric Flair stuff with Dusty Rhodes, because a lot of that is easily accessible on YouTube or the WWE Network or any of that sort of stuff where, you know, Dusty's going after Flair and throughout 1985, you know, 84 and those times leading up to Starrcade. I think that stuff's awesome. New Japan and the quest of AJ Styles and the Bullet Club in New Japan, which is available through the New Japan World Network. That they have, I think, is fantastic as well. And, you know, again, there has been great stuff. The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels from a couple of years ago, that quest leading up to their final battle. There really is a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of nonsense, and there's way too much of it that oversaturates everything. But there are some really good gems in there, too, and a lot of good stuff. And you mentioned Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's story, nobody's ever going to remember Daniel Bryan's crappy feud with Kane. Nobody's going to ever remember him coming back after his injury and being laid out by during the Intercontinental title reign and being laid out by Sheamus and basically having his career ended. Yeah, you might remember that a little bit, but everyone's always going to think the pinnacle of his career was standing on top at WrestleMania, and that's a moment that I'll never forget either.
I'll always remember Daniel Bryan as the guy that called out AJ Styles as a flat earther.
And that too, with the man always trying to silence his opinions, as he would say on SmackDown Live.
Who is a bigger bully than Daniel Bryan? Seriously, think about it. Like, he's a horrible man. It's great. I love it.
Well, and you know what? And really, in storyline for him too. Remember, he ripped the women's title away from Naomi, and she wasn't even going to be hurt for 30 days. He just said, "No, this is the way it's going to be." I mean, he's a hardcore, brutal man. Everybody thinks he's just green and happy and all that sort of stuff. Daniel Bryan, tear you up.
Do you think he'll actually wrestle again? I mean, when is his contract up? In like a year or two?
I'm not sure. I think he will. I think if he does, I wish he wouldn't. I don't care. Because again, he won.
Oh, no, I completely agree.
He won wrestling, but like I could see him working New Japan, Tokyo Dome show. Okay. And doing something big like that. I wish he wouldn't, but I could see him doing it. My only hope is if he does one, hopefully that's enough and he can get it out of the system.
You know that's not
going to
happen. You know he's going to be doing ladder falls at like 60. It's such a bad idea.
Well, you know, and what he's going to say is, I bet too. I mean, because this is one thing he can do, and you can do in New Japan, and you can do in a lot of places. It's not like he can't do what he would say is chain wrestling, quote unquote, safe matches. It's just still the first flat back bump. I just don't want to be, you know, anything that rattles his brain too much. Again, I'm so mortified for him because I am, you know, I am in such awe of how his career went. And he is, again, he won wrestling to me.
It's going to, okay, so here's my conspiracy theory that no one's brought up yet that I've seen. Billy Corgan bought the NWA title and the name, but that's it. No catalog or anything. Is that correct?
No, well, apparently he's got the NWA Houston stuff that Bruce Tharp had and some things like that, but apparently there's some doubt that's being casted by, I guess, Howard Brody, the former NWA president, who says that WWE actually has just as many rights to use things for perpetuity as he does.
Okay, so he doesn't really have anything except the future name.
No, just that, and I guess some tape categories or tape libraries. That's about it.
Perfect. I am convinced that Billy Corgan, who is real-life acquaintances with CM Punk, bought that just so he could one day stage a CM Punk-Daniel Bryan match somewhere in Chicago or something, and that'll be worth it alone. And it'll be two 45-year-old guys that shouldn't be doing this, but they're doing it anyways.
I don't know about that, but I do remember there was a great conspiracy theory, and I don't know how, you know, ever true it was, and I doubt it was, that when CM Punk was, they were doing the whole thing with the contract where it's like, would he leave with the belt? Ring of Honor was around that time for sale, or there were rumblings about it being for sale where people were actually going with CM Punk is going to buy Ring of Honor and then take the title to Ring of Honor, which I always thought was a really over the top one, but it's like, I'm not even sure how that one got started.
I never thought that the guy that was inducted at WrestleMania 29 would be feuding with the guy that was inducted at WrestleMania 30, and one of them happened to be president, and it was not Schwarzenegger. So whatever, I mean, nothing is that unbelievable.
It really isn't anymore, is it? I wonder, too, I think there were a lot of people, and I'm sure you were one of them, too. I don't know if you looked at, as everything was happening over the last year and things were starting to kind of shake out, it's like, if you're somebody that understands wrestling or the psychology of promotion, whether that be mixed martial arts or boxing, you seem to be in some ways in a far better position to kind of understand what happened with the entire election and the entire way the thing played out from a media aspect. And I think from a way that people responded, just think we were better off with that psychology, whether that's politics devolving or what, I have no idea, but I think seems to be wrestling fans seem to be a lot more savvy than the average person when it came to what was happening.
Well, it's the only thing that's keeping us sane. Well, we've been working on this. We started this roughly when Trump entered the primaries, and we're like, we're gonna stop this once he loses his second primary, and then he won his second primary. So, like, I guess we're doing this indefinitely. Yeah, I have yet to be upset or surprised by anything. It's all happened before. And the thing that's really disappointing is the first George Bush was really good friends with a Texas promoter. He should have taught his sons wrestling instead of baseball, and Jeb would have seen this coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, I'm going to brain lock on the political op that worked for his father that came up with the Willie Horton ad, the old blues guitarist, mm-hmm, who mm-hmm. was, oh, God, why am I brain locking on his name? Shoot. They made a documentary out of him, too, that I think Netflix was airing. I didn't have a chance to see it yet, but
the Roger, not Roger Ailes, shoot. Roger,
Young guy, died of brain cancer like in his 40s, was very, very young and was very smart, but played that card. And it was like, you know, it's been funny since then that, you know, through Clinton and you know, there were a lot of dirty tricks that people said, you know, were played against Tsongas and things like that. But, you know, his manipulation to where he was and kind of from that point, from that Willie Horton ad, how things have devolved when it came, you know, no, there's no Morning in America ads anymore. Everything is, you know, countdown to the apocalypse. And it was kind of during that Bush era and during the change in the media and how we view TV and how we take in TV and the expansion of it and Fox's influence and buying stations and coming up with a current affair type shows and things like that, that, you know, it was around that time, I think we really started running the river. Now, politics has always been, you know, cesspooly, but I think that's when a lot of the dams opened up and started to kind of flood where we got to now on both sides of just this ludicrousness of millions upon millions upon millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars being spent from out of state for Montana's, you know, at-large mm-hmm. congressional race. I mean, it's a level of insanity that's over the top.
Yeah, it sure is, but whatever. I mean, it is what it is.
It's where we're at. That's what it is.
And to pretend to not, that it's not wrestling to me is silly. Just embrace it for what it is and realize it's a game, and Triple H's theme song literally spells out how to play it. It's there. He's Jared Kushner. It's not complicated.
No. It's a, look, it's, you know, the bureaucracy, somebody needs to change Washington. You're never going to change Washington. I lived in that area for years. You have everybody either works for a defense contractor, the Social Security Administration. I mean, how many people have their livelihoods attached to that? You don't get somebody in there to change it or try to change the entire system or drain swamps. That type of shit doesn't exist. What does exist is getting people in there who know how to play the game and how to work with people, because it's a political game. They call it that for a reason. That's what it is. And the better you work together, your Tip O'Neills and Ronald Reagans and such and people like that, the easier it is to make things move along. If you don't want to play nice in the sandbox and everybody wants a little piece of the puzzle, we kind of get the bottleneck we've gotten over the last God knows how many years.
So you're saying right now we're getting to like a 2000 WCW point in Washington, D.C.?
You know, it'll never be that point. You know, we've tried to see shutdowns of the government and things like that. It just, those type of things never seem to work. It's going to go on forever. I guess if you wanted to tie it to something, if something that continues to lose money is really ugly, nobody cares about it, nobody likes it, it's kind of like Impact continuing on for all of these years. Because remember, technically, Impact lasted longer than WCW.
Oh, that's right. Oh, boy. Hogan's always on top, isn't he?
Boy, I thought we were trying to end this on a positive note.
Hogan is always on top. This is crazy. What was really weird is I covered the RNC, and I saw Linda McMahon on the floor, and no one recognized her, and she had a cast on, Cowboy Bob Orton cast. I don't think she needed a cast because she was on the floor of the convention in a delegate seat. She did not need to be there. She could be in a box. And I also ran into Dolph Ziggler on the floor on the same night. And it crystallized to me. It was also the night of the Ted Cruz heel turn when everyone in the crowd beat him. That's when it crystallized to me, like, oh, yeah, that's what this is. I'm in the exact same spot. I keep going to CM Punk, and I apologize. I'm in the exact same spot where CM Punk lost the Royal Rumble and UFC, and this is where Donald Trump is accepting the nomination for presidency of the United States.
It's a hell of a world, isn't it?
Yeah, Hogan rules. That's all that matters.
How am I doing? Am I doing okay? I'm president. Hey, I'm president. Can you believe it, right?